grain of rice, a grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
The Allianz Football League this weekend, I'm just wondering, was there any... There was no decisive result. I think Clare winning above Cavan. I think Kildare beating Laois. It's ironically, again, that we're talking so much about Division 2 of the Football League being the most kind of yo-yo, up-and-down league. In terms of Division 1, you know, Galway showing again that they are the real deal. You know, if we were doing our power rankings, you know, are they probably, you know, we used to say Dublin were one, Kerry were two, Galway were three. I'm just wondering, really, are Galway kind of almost the form team in the country at the moment? Kerry won in Mayo, and our guest on this special edition of the Examiner GA podcast, in association, with Allianz, is a Kerryman. He wasn't playing yesterday in Castlebar. In fact, he wasn't even in Castlebar yesterday. But he remains one of the great footballers of our time. Whatever generation you're from, if you sat down with a pencil tomorrow morning and you said, I'm going to write down the top 10 Kerry footballers that I have seen, and obviously that means that, you know, that probably rules out guys, you know, maybe Tom Geggo, O'Connor and Paddy Baum, Brosnan, and these guys who go back to a different generation. But if you were talking about from the 60s, the 70s on any list of top 10, maybe even top 5 Kerry footballers, you are talking about mentioning, in fact, you're not talking about mentioning, you're absolutely mentioning our guest on this week's special GA podcast, Seamus Moynihan. Welcome to the Irish Examiner. Like, Seamus, the big discussion in Kerry so far this year, and in fairness, it's probably been last year, and it's been the year before, even when Fitzy was manager, is defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, going way back, like the time, like they had to put you back into full back, if you remember back in 2000, emergency. It just seems that Kerry is not developing defenders who love being defenders. Is that a fair point?
Yeah, I think it probably is a fair point, Tony. Looking at the development squads, they have been very successful in what they've done and what they, you know, to be fair.
Miners and stuff, yeah.
Since, like, 1994 was obviously a huge year in the sense that they won a lot, and there was such a gap. And, you know, funny enough, we were still getting the conveyor belt. We were still getting the two or three players coming through. Mm. But in terms of winning All-Irelands, we weren't. And, you know, I suppose it came to a stage where Jack came back and set out his stalls. And from there on then, you know, five All-Irelands, and which was a fantastic result. And they, it looked like there was a conveyor belt. And the development squads are certainly working. And I see it, you know, at local level where they're bringing in players and they're putting them on programmes. And, you know, it is churning out quality players. And, you know, from small clubs to the large clubs, there's no favouritism. If you're good enough, you're inside in with the development squads. And it is very good. In terms of training, I really don't know, Tony, what they're doing. But as I said, they've won All-Ireland, which is great. In terms of defence, you're probably right. I think in Kerry, and I suppose the way we play football, it's the beautiful game. We go out and most of those players are probably playing midfield, or they're playing a very central role. They're not playing cornerback, or they're not playing full back, and they're not playing a kind of a rough diamond game. I think it's, you know, there's very few of them being produced in the sense that they're not playing that day in and day out. They're probably playing a really getting on ball.
Yeah, an expansive game.
Yeah. And, you know, they're very much an all-round footballer. And, you know, I don't think probably Kerry are concentrating on working on out-and-out defenders as such. It's about the whole footballer and, as you said, the rounded footballer, and they can play an expansive game. The cornerback can kick the ball over the bar. And I think...
But Mark O'Shea, to use an example, Seamo, Mark O'Shea could kick the ball over the bar, and he did with his club. But when it came to shutting down a massive corner forward or attacker with the opposition, he could do that. Mike McCarthy could do it. Tom Sullivan could do it. Seamus Moynihan could do it. I'm just saying there just doesn't seem to be that sort of defensive culture in Kerry at the minute.
Yeah, and yeah, you've all those players. They were multitaskers. Mike Mack, Mark Shea, really were those. Mike Hassett was a quality player. Yeah. Mike was comfortable in any position he could play. And you know, you go back, Paddy Lynch. Prior to that, you know, Paddy Shea, Jano, you know, they were all players. Tim Kennelly, they were all players that could fit in any position. But when the push came to shove, they were class backs and they did their job. They were, you know, really, really close. Didn't give away fatal fouls, and you know, they did their job exceptionally well. From a Kerry point of view, but look, Tony, when I was playing, you know, Barry Shea did his cruciate ligament in 2000, mm-hmm. and I had to go back full back, and you know, there was big question marks. Why aren't we creating full backs, and why isn't there more full backs out there? And you know, look, that question will always be there. And looking at the game over the weekend, while the weather wasn't great and everything, I still felt, you know, Kerry defence was played better against Mayo than they did against Mead, especially against Mead.
Yeah,
I thought Mead, we were in. You know, Mead ran at us and we were very vulnerable, and they ran from long distance and they were running. They were, you know, our forwards at times were leaving them run through and work out, and we, you know, they were running into scoring places and creating goal chances, and we were fouling right in front of goal. So defensively, it was a bad day out in the office against Mead, but they definitely reviewed it and did better against Mayo away, which is good to see. But look, I think, and I've mentioned it before, Tony, if we are going to win in All-Ireland defensively, we will. And that's no hidden secret there, to be fair. Yeah. I think, you know, Peter Crowley to come back into it will be. I think Peter is you know, that kind of a player where he can add a rough diamond element into it. I think we need someone central. Shane Ryan, to be fair to him, even against Mead, played very well in that role. He was blocking, he was shouldering, he was putting himself
Shane
in the
Enright.
Way. Shane Enright. My
sorry,
apologies.
Shane
sorry.
Enright, yeah. Shane Enright. Played at six, yeah.
And played at six, and I thought played very well. And, you know, we need players like that. We need blockers coming through the middle, and we just need, and as you said, the likes of the Mark O'Shea's, the Tom O'Sullivan's, the Mike Max, when they are marking, they're very, very sticky and they're not giving away fouls.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, look, we've Donny Buckley's inside with Kerry. Donny, for me, and I've seen him working at club level, and I've seen different courses, but Donny is unbelievable. And, you know, I just like to see Donny getting more time.
Yes.
With the players. I'm not sure how much time he's getting, but I'd like to see, because Donny is class. And in fairness to Donny, Donny turned Mayo, who were one of the probably easiest teams ever to walk out of defence with the ball, because they didn't want to know about it in terms of tackling and whatnot, to one of the best teams in the country.
If not the best.
If the best, yeah. And, you know, they were so unlucky against a really good Dublin team in the years that they just came a little bit short. But their work rate was unbelievable. And, you know, that was definitely down to Donny's training and his work ethos. And, you know, I'd just like to see a bit of that coming in with Kerry. Yeah.
Because you'd like to see a bit of Donny Buckleyisms almost in the defence side of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And because we have it, we have the powder up front, we have some unbelievable forwards, and it's just, we just need to tighten up. You know, when we go up 8 points, we're still not certain we're going to win the game. And that should not be the case. If any other team, if Donegal or if Tyrone or if Monaghan go up 8 points, it's game over. It's sealed, it's done. And with us, it's not. And that's uncomfortable from a supporter's point of view. And, you know, I just think when we're playing quality teams like the Dublins, we need to box off games. If we go up 4 or 5 points, we need to say, lads, it's going to be hard to score against Kerry, a hard crowd to break down, and we're not at the minute. And if we can crack that, I think, Tony, we're in a great position. But
yeah, I think you're right. I think certainly there's so many footballers in the Kerry defence at the moment. I suppose that's what I look at. Even the goalie, even Shane Ryan, wants to come out and play football. Then you have Gavin White tearing up, you have Paul Murphy. I suppose, you know what, maybe, Shemo, it's a cyclical thing. Maybe the fact that Mayo, I mean, you look at your Boyles and your Higginses and your Harrisons and, you know, all these naturally good defenders who take pride in stopping an opponent and scoring. Maybe there will come a phase where those Kerry guys start coming through again. But as you're making the point, 20 years ago, we were talking about a problem at fullback that you had to go in and fill. And I'm just wondering, is it just not, as you say, in the Kerry psyche anymore to produce natural dogs, as we call them?
I just, you know, Tony, I suppose they're not playing in those kind of positions. But look, back to the Gavin Whites and the Paul Murphys. Gavin Murphy has played very well in the last few games, of what I've seen. And I think he's got physically stronger. defensively has become way better in terms of a guy's taking him on, he's running beside him. He actually defended extremely well against Meath Sunday week in Killarney and got his hand in, dispossessed guys. He wasn't fouling easily, and I think Gavin has definitely brought his game to another level in terms of defence, which is great. Paul Murphy has been a hidden hero over the last few years. He's been really a dynamo and has always been consistently played very well. And I think, you know, look, I've no problem with Paul or Gavin bursting up the field. Mayo were doing that. Like Mayo, if you were marking any of those, Boyle or Higgins and
Keegan,
they were bombing up the field all day. But they had a massive tendency once they lost possession, their wing forwards got back or the boys got back. They were up and down the field. They were unbelievable fitness, and you have to have that. But, you know, I don't want to hinder Gavin White going up the field, or I don't want to hinder Paul Murphy. By all means, go up, but we need to kill the ball. And when it is turned around, they have to get back up, or someone has to get back, because they can't be there. You can't allow space in front of the full back forward or full back line. But, you know, look, I think we're going the right way. We still have the right personnel inside there. I don't think there's no one outside in Kerry at the minute that's been wronged. You know, there's fair no point. One, you know, saying, oh, this fella should be inside. I think Peter and the management have everyone in terms of defence inside there. You know, guys, maybe you could say, with the exception of a few of the fellas maybe from East Kerry, is not with my East Kerry hat, but Chris O'Donoghue and Niall O'Donoghue must have been very close. Dan O'Donoghue, they were
very impressive last year.
Very impressive in the Coney Championship, and they were all played Kerry under-20s, and they've, you know, where else do you have to go in terms of getting to the next stage, like, you know. Yeah. So, but they, no doubt, in the next year or two, they'll get their opportunity, like, you know. But I still think they have the personnel inside there. It's just about working with them and just getting them to a better place. And as I said, from a management point of view, Tommy is an all-star defender. We've Donny Buckley, and you know we should just be working on that. And I think if we can keep working that day in, day out in training, getting that defensive mode when we don't have the ball, that we're working and we're hungry to get the ball back, because when we do have possession and when our forwards get ball inside,
they're dangerous.
More often they're very dangerous.
Talking about being dangerous, you probably, I don't know, does everybody know that for the last 2 years, not this year, but for the last 2 years, you were manager of the Fossa Footballers. And obviously that meant, did it mean dealing and seeing David Clifford's talent close at hand? Or I suppose the fact, the inter-county demands being as much as they are, you probably didn't see David Clifford as much as you'd like to.
Well, you know, look, to answer the question, Tony, we had David whenever he was able to play, to be fair to the guy, you know. And, you know, that goes with every inter-county player for whether there's from Fossa or Austin Stacks or the Crokes. They, you know, they're limited. They can only, they're really, their input into the county league is nil, really. But, you know, David always came back for the junior championship, and he bought in for that month, and he was there at every training. But David is obviously a class player, and, you know, it's just very hard to figure out that he's still just 21.
Yeah, and only just gone 21.
Just gone 21, and you know, I was fortunate enough to have seen David play with the Sim, but I was involved with him as well with these Kerry Miners for a few years, and, you know, look, an exceptional talent. And as I said, he's 21 going on 31. He looks like he's been around for a long time. But look, he's left and right. He's strength. He's height. He's a poacher. He can score. He can create things as well for other players.
And was there a day that you saw or that you can remember Seamus going back, even to, as you said, when you had him involved with the same, or where you actually saw this thing out in the field and you thought to yourself, wow, there's something special going on here?
Yeah, well, I think the goal he got against in the All-Ireland final for the Sim up in Croke Park, and any other one would have put the ball over the bar. It was in the second half into the hill, and David, for around 20 yards out, just turned around and he just lashed the ball into the top corner of the net. It was just a freakish goal, to be fair, and you know, it just turned the whole game around. Right. It was a game that the Sim were really struggling, and I know Conor Glass got sent off, and he was an exceptional player.
He was
from Derry.
Went to Australia.
He went to Australia afterwards, but the whole game changed within 2 minutes. Conor Glass had been sent off, and I'd say De Sim had a ball in the back of the net and there was no turning back from there. But that goal in itself, like, was, I think De Sim were down 2 points and another fella would have thrown the ball over the bar, but this guy just went for the juggler and buried it. But it was just that kind of class. He got a similar goal in a county championship against Mid-Kerry back in Beaufort, where the game probably had petered out. It was kind of over, but he was 20 yards out. The whole defence just turned their back to it, and meanwhile David just turned around and slotted it into the top corner again.
Was it a free?
It was a free kick. Oh yeah. But look, another fella would have probably just put the ball down or just slotted over the bar. Yeah. But he's just, his instinct, he saw it and went for it.
Is that what separates, you know, the top tier, Seamus? Is it, people talk about this, that and the other, but it's almost that ability to think a second faster.
Yeah, there's no doubting, Tony. And I think, you know, if you look at the traits of all the great forwards that played, and I was fortunate enough to have played with the Gooch and Morris as well. That kind of player where they get their opportunity and they will take it. Gooch, whether he'll roll it along the ground or underneath the guy's legs. And Morris had that kind of a radar kick as well, where he'd run through, he'd be soaring with his right, and he'd lash it into the top of the net with his left. And even in training, you could see that with Morris. Like, he'd ask Morris to hit the ball off the crossbar, he'd hit it off the crossbar, like, just for the laugh. And he'd do it a couple of times if you asked him. But look, that, some players have that special.
So who is the most, I mean, I got to ask you the question then, who is the most outrageously talented? When you think of those, three names you've mentioned there, Morris, Fitz, Colm Cooper, David Clifford.
Yeah, to be even comparing David at 21 years of age, to be in that level, it's a fair compliment, to be fair, Tony. And like, he has so much football left to play. So, like, where he's coming from, he's got off to some start. Yeah. And we're actually even talking about, as I said, it's a compliment in itself. Like, you know, but like, the two boys were wizards, so he's in that zone already with a lot of football to play, or hopefully anyway.
You mentioned the Hogan Cup there, and David Clifford has done a lot of special things, but did David Clifford manage to win a Hogan Cup and play midfield for his county at senior level in the championship that same summer?
He wasn't far off it anyway. I'd say he must have been.
But Seamus Moynihan did do that.
Yeah, well, I was 92, and you know, it was a great honour. And you know, I suppose there's two sides to each coin. It was fantastic to win the All-Ireland with the same that year, and obviously to get a call, Tony, to train. I think it went from training with under-21s with Mickey Ned,
right,
and myself and Billy were held back after we had a right hole opening of a session with under-21s, and we were held back to train with the seniors again.
Billy Shea.
Yeah. And, you know, so we trained a second session with the boys, and from there on then we were in. I was doing a matric at the time, and I'd say I'd run four subjects done, and I'd say once I got the call to come in training with Kerry, the matric went out the window. That was it.
So let me get this right. You're after winning a Hogan Cup, you're with the Kerry under-21s, you're actually doing under-21 and senior sessions in the same day, and you're trying to do the matriculation exam.
Yeah. Well, look, thankfully the Leaving Cert had been done a few weeks prior to that, and I the matric, it was kind of an insurance policy really at the time. So I had no interest in it really. I had the Leaving Cert done, but it was game over. I had the four kind of major. It was the maths and the Irish and English and one of the science subjects done. And you know, after that, I've said to hell with it. Like, you know, but no, it was a great honour to get in and train with the likes of Jacko, who was still playing at the time, Ambrose, who was part of the 84 up to 86 team, and Morris Fitz was inside there. And you know, these were fellas that I obviously looked up to, and it was a great honour to be inside with the boys. And you know, while it was great, and didn't get the call to play, you know, I didn't see that coming, to be fair. I say half the county, no one in the county saw that coming either. And you know, but look, it was great to get that honour. And but obviously it was a bad result.
I was just about to say that after all this, there's a huge but at the end of the sentence.
Yeah. And you know, look, fair juice to Clare, and I always say that. And look, I wasn't saying it the following Monday morning. I can remember I was working in Pretty Polly, where my dad used to work, and I came in, I think it was 8 o'clock the following morning. It was only a summer job. I think it was the week after, but there was some fella inside, and he was singing a song, "It's a Long, Long Way from Here to Clare," just to remind me of the defeat. But look, you know, Clare deserved their day, and we, you know, I suppose our whole game plan that day revolved about kicking the ball into Jacko. Jacko was full forward, you kick it in, you run off it, and you'd lash it over the bar, and was probably doing that in training. But in fairness to Clare, you know, they were teak tough and they were fit, and they had some great players too, to be fair. Francis McInerney and Martin Daly got the goal at the end, and you know, they had some really, really solid players who had played a lot of football over the years, and you know, they definitely deserved their win on the day. But there was no back door back then, and like, you know, it was over. It was cahoots and you were out. And
you're only 18, Shamo, at the time. Is that something that as an 18-year-old you're just able to blow off that night and go out for a few beers and get over it? Or were you like raking in depression for a week after it?
Look, Tony, I was obviously, as an 18-year-old, I wasn't as bad as the fellas that had soldiered. I came in, I was only wet behind the ears after probably putting in 4 weeks of a commitment towards that. I can only imagine what the boys who had been there since October, November, had started in the league and had put in a huge slog, had felt, you know, losing a Munster final. And no, obviously, of course, I you can't compare that, because I hadn't the hard slog done in the December and January running, doing all the hard work that they had done. But I was obviously disappointed. But, you know, I suppose at 18, you say, look, we'll always go next year and we'll get back and we'll get moving. And unfortunately, for the next 3 years, that kind of result didn't happen, and we weren't winning Munsters, and we were coming across a probably a very solid Cork team as well, who had coming off the back of winning in 1990, and you know, they had all Ireland medals in their back pocket, and they had a very, very solid, physical, strong Cork team at the time, and we were probably still a team in very much in transition, like,
very
you
much
know,
so, yeah.
And we're just coming short. Should have won 94, had that in the bag. Fairness to Stephen O'Brien, got a great goal to pull off a win, but that was one that we really left out. I think 93 and 95, we were that little bit shy. We were close, but just not good enough. And
what was it like? I mean, because you are part, well, obviously you had huge success afterwards, but you know, Seamus, there's a very particular and unfortunate breed of Kerry footballer that was there kind of from 87 to 96.
Yeah.
You know, the so-called famine that won nothing. But you were actually in at the start of that. You put in 92, 93, 94, 95.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, for somebody, like, how difficult was that to be part of that Kerry setup at the time that was probably getting... No, well, they were getting no trophies, but they were probably getting very little love in their own county either.
There's no doubt in that, Tony. And, you know, it would only after a game, if you went downtown afterwards, you wouldn't belong being told, you know, if you had a bad game or whatnot. But I'm certainly glad of one thing, there was no social media back then.
Yeah,
or there was, you know, look, you did a media day maybe before a Munster semi final or a Munster final. But, you know, back then, you either there was nothing, and I feel sorry for the players at the minute, because there's absolutely no escape. And if you are on Instagram, or if you're on Twitter, or you're on Facebook, you're so easy and you're so accessible, really. And you know, guys saying things about you and whatnot. So look, thankfully back then it wasn't there. We all felt the pressure, there's no doubt. Anytime you put on a Kerry jersey, there's a pressure to perform, and there's a tradition there, and there's an expectation there to win Munsters and to be playing in Croke Park and being involved in All-Irelands. And, you know, it just wasn't happening. And obviously there was a huge frustration building up. But to be fair, that wasn't a lot of the times filtering back to the players hardcore all the time. It's gone to another level now, Tony, to be fair. But, you know, it was, there's no doubting, a very hard few years. And on top of that, Tony, I was in UCC for 4 years.
Well, I'm going to come to the Cork thing now, because, like, the fact that you're from Glenflesk, I mean, you know, you're nearly looking over the county bones, obviously. The traffic was always there. Like, was that kind of phase of your career, Shamo, almost coloured by the redness of Cork and being beaten by Cork at that stage, and the fact, as you say, that you went then to go to college in UCC as well?
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, those few years were very difficult, Tony, but you know, the flip side of that, at UCC level we were winning Sigerson, so there was we were getting some there was some ray of light, and we won 94 and 95, and you know, they were fantastic. And at club level, Glenflesk won the first Southern Hook Cup in 1994.
Okay.
East Kerry got to the first county championship in 95, beaten by Lone Rangers. We were making progress in some parts of
the career,
but having said that, from a Kerry point of view, we were hitting a brick wall, and it was just very, very frustrating. And it wasn't from lack of work, it wasn't from lack of anything. It was just, look, we just didn't, as I said, the team was in transition, and all of a sudden, overnight in 96, the under 21 conveyor belt started coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, Paddy had been doing his work with the under
21s. And they won the 21 championship.
They won it twice. They won it twice. And, you know, there was a big crop of players. And I can remember even in 1996, we played the Kerry under 21s in a challenge game. The Kerry seniors played the under 21s. Yeah. And it was probably one of the dirtiest games I played in. And it was, you know, there was a bit.
PO was in charge of the 21s at this time. Yeah.
21s. And it was in 95 or 96. I can't remember the year now again, Tony, to be fair. But it was one of those years where Paddy was making inroads with the under 21s. And, like, there was hell for leather during the match because there was senior players with a bit of pride and they were being beaten by younger fellas and it wasn't going down well, and it became into a bit of a brawl. And, you know, look, but they were good games, and you could see there straight away that there was young fellas biting at the bait and they wanted to get the jerseys from the seniors. And, you know, all those guys ultimately came through, the likes of Barry Shea. You had William Kirby, Dermot Murphy was playing in that team. You had, you know, there were like Darragh Kinnaird, Darragh Shea were still,
yeah,
and John Crowley were still in that team, and Liam Hassett, even though they were in our under 21, but they were playing with the under 21s.
Yeah,
and you know, so they were brilliant battles. And by 97, I think it took until 97 for that transition to really come through, and for those guys to step up, that they were actually ready for senior football. And
Kerry, I mean, this is a very difficult question to answer, but I just wouldn't mind your opinion on it. Would Kerry have won in 97 if Paddy hadn't taken over at that stage? In other words, was, you know, the talent was coming through, Seamus,
yeah,
but was PO the kind of the little bit of an X factor, maybe, that was, he came in at the right time?
Yeah, and he probably came in 96, and I think that was a learning curve for him as well, because you know, we beat Cork in the Munster final that year, and you know, albeit I'd say it was by a point, I think Killian Burns kicked a point over the bar just at the very end to win it. And you know, our preparation for the All-Ireland semi-final was, to say the least, was the worst ever, probably. And it came quick, like, but just we didn't probably look beyond Munster that year, Tony.
Yeah.
And you know, and 3 weeks later we got railroaded by Mayo up in Croke Park, and it was a real, you know, our preparation was poor,
right?
As there's no way other way of describing it.
Was that the one where Declan O'Keefe was lobbed by John Casey, yeah, wasn't it? Yeah, I think, yeah,
it was from a free kick, and yeah, we just every one of us, James, I don't think anyone after that game could look themselves in the mirror and say they were happy with their performance. And Mayo were fitter, Mayo were faster, they were physically stronger, they ticked all the boxes, where we were way off it. And it was a massive learning curve for Paddy, and I think it was the first time where we kind of, I think there was Kerry Radio had the guys ringing in the following day, and one guy suggested to put us all into a bus and throw us off in Benna Beach and off the cliff and whatnot. But
yeah,
you know, Paddy took it bad, and he took the critical comments very hard. He took it bad, and we all did, no doubt. But within 3 or 4 weeks, we were back training. And it really, I think it was a great learning curve for everyone. And we knew ourselves that we were that so far off winning, right, in All-Ireland, and we needed to put in a major shift. And from October on, we really, we put in a massive winter campaign that year. And I think we got beaten by Meath in one of the league games, but that was in maybe November. But I think from that November until we went up to Offaly in a game, after winning the National League and the All-Ireland and Munster, we went a load of games without losing.
When you get to that year in 97, and you're obviously looking at your first All-Ireland final, I mean, at that stage, I'm guessing you're probably 23 at that stage, 22, 23 at that stage. Morris obviously is maybe two, three, four years older than you. Like, how much of a leader in that team was he at that stage? Because he'd been around even before you, you know. So how much of a leader was he by 97?
Look, Morris was a great guy. And, you know, when Morris spoke, people listened. And, you know, he wouldn't ever take over a dressing room. And in fairness, Paddy was brilliant inside the dressing room. But if he had something to say, Morris would say it, and he'd say it in training. But, you know, that year, especially in 97, Morris just had one of those lovely run-ins where that, you know, he had groin issues and whatnot, but in 97 he put in a serious, serious training campaign, and he didn't miss a training session, everything went well. Like, but you could see after Christmas, like, we played Dublin in a challenge game up in Parnell Park, and Morris beat him in his own. It was unbelievable. Like, that day he kicked them over the bar from every distance. Every time he touched the ball, it was like magic. And you just could see he was just in supreme form. Mm. And that form just continued all the way through the year. He stayed injury free, and it was, he was just absolutely fantastic, and it was magical watching it, and it was great to be part of that. And you know, everyone else grew confidence from that, Tony, as well, in the sense that Morris is flying, get the ball into him and let him do what he has to, coupled by the fact that he had guys with him now as well that could do stuff like, you know, Liam Hassett was on the 40, great worker. You had Derek Kaneda, you had Billy Shea, you had John Crowley, you had Palade, who was flying that year. Number 10. Dennis Dwyer had come into the team, kind of a third man midfielder, really playing as a wing forward. Yeah. You know, so, and Brian Clark was involved, you know, brought his own bag of tricks.
Yeah.
And, you know, had a good relationship with Morris as well. And, you know, they had a good thing going on. And it was just, Morris didn't have to do it for the full 60 minutes or 70 minutes. There was other guys who were chipping in as well.
Yeah.
And but when Morris, it was definitely 1 year where Morris had a 10 out of 10 all the way through, and just everything he did touched, you know, it would turn to gold.
Like everybody, not everybody, but certainly I would say an awful large percentage of young fellas in Kerry, they imagined the idea of actually winning an All-Ireland. I mean, when you actually had your first one in the bag in 97, Seamus, what are your thoughts at that stage? Are you think I'm a made man now in Kerry, nobody can take this away from me?
No, Tony, number one, it was just kind of getting the monkey off the back after 11 years wait. It was, you know, that for me still of the All-Irelands that I won, 97 was definitely still the sweetest one.
Was
because, yeah, there's no doubting that, because I suppose the county had waited so long for it, and as you said, as a team, we were under pressure to bring home the goods. It was an exceptional feeling, and you know that will not change. You know, and for the fellas like I played with Liam Flaherty, Eamon Breen, Sean Burke, Peter Leary,
Stephen Stack,
you know, mother God, like they had soldiered, like they were in and out. Morris was there from 87, the boys were in and out from 88, 89, and you know, they had taken some hits to the ship over that period of time, and it was just great. You know, obviously from a personal point of view, it's great to win and Kerry win, but for those fellas that had soldiered so long, it was brilliant to see them. You know, I played Flaherty myself with the wing back line that year, and I think Paddy got it right. You know, Flaherty sometimes was being played midfield, I was being, you know, maybe sometimes I was played centre forward, Eamon Breen was being played centre forward. I think Paddy went and he got his house in order that year, and defensively with a very, very solid wing back line.
Yes.
And our full back line was exceptionally strong as well. Barry slotted in, you know, just very confident, went in, had a physical presence inside, nothing fazed him. And Stephen Stack, you had Killian Burns ended up in the All-Ireland final, and you know that Mike Cassett, Morgan Shea were very close to that were coming in and out of that team as well, like, you know. But I think defensively we really got it right. Declan had a fantastic year in goals. His kickouts really worked, and they were going 60, 70 yards out. And midfield, you had Dara, who really blossomed that year, and William was a fantastic foil with him as well. So all the way through the team was really, really balanced.
Yeah, but you even naming those, Seamus, it's completely, it was very much, and I know that the Kerry didn't win All-Irelands in the subsequent 2 years, but when you look, and we were talking earlier about the talent, the raw, attacking, exciting talent that Kerry has now there, that team was a more kind of workmanlike, grinded out. I mean, your ideal team almost would be a balance of both, if you know what I mean. You know, like Morris carried a lot of the attacking weight in that time. But even the defenders you're mentioning there, like, they take the head off you, some of those guys.
Oh, yeah, well, there were some of those guys that were teak tough and, you know, played on the edge. But, you know, you need those few rough diamonds, Tony.
And, I agree.
You know,
that's my point about the current team. Yeah.
Dublin have that at the minute. They have, you know, all exceptional players, like, you know, but some of the, you know, and not naming names, but these are all great players, like, you know, but James McCarthy, Johnny Cooper, Philly McMahon, all these guys can play both ways, like, you know, and like they've won All-Irelands, but you need these kind of enforcers in the team. And we were lucky we had those guys, you know, Breen and Flaherty were could play football, fantastic footballers, but you wouldn't mess with these guys, and you know, they took no prisoners, neither did Stephen Stack. And you know, look, that balance is needed, and I think it's still needed in the current game, like, you know.
I'm not just going chronologically, but you know, as we're talking, Seamus, I mean, all these things are flashing through my head, and you, I mean, as decorated a career as you had, and I think, I mean, in fairness, I think you know the regard in which you're held, not just in Kerry, but nationally. But you had 92. You mentioned that being beaten by Clare. Was that as bad as what happened in 2001 in the All-Ireland semi-final, that disastrous day against Meath? I think it was at 15 points or something Kerry were beaten by. Yeah. What are your reflections and recollections on that? Did you see it coming, or how did it happen?
Well, it certainly didn't see it coming, Tony, because, you know, you've never... I think, you know, in hindsight, when you look back now, you can see how it happened, in the sense that, you know, we played Dublin in a replay in the qualifiers, got through, fell over the line in a very physical game, both days out. We lost Tomás Shea in the game. Tomás was missing for the Meath game. Within 5 days, we were playing County Championship below... Gael took play Glenflesk in the county championship. 5 days later, I got an injection into my knee to play. I started wing forward with Glenflesk, and you had myself and John Crowley in one team. You had Mark Shea, Dara Shea, Aidan McGarrett,
Dara Kaneda.
You had so Robart involved in the panel. So within 5 days, we were playing county championship below in Austin Sachs Park in the quarter final.
Yeah,
and I'd say within either a week or 2 weeks, we were playing Meath. So that just doesn't add up, and
doesn't happen now,
and, you know, our preparation certainly wasn't good again going into that Meath game. And you know, look what happened. It certainly, you know, for 20-23 minutes the knife was in a, you know, there was very few scores, and just the gates opened up then, like, you know. And you know, so look, it was one of those horrible days to be involved in, but look, was it worse than 2001? Probably, because look, in 92, in 90, you know, look, 92, it is what it is. But 2001, we were just after winning the All-Ireland year before. All right, if right was right.
And you understood it at all. It was nine years later.
We knew what we were about. We were experienced players. We knew what it took and what needed to be done. And to collapse like that in an All-Ireland semi-final doesn't make sense. It shouldn't have happened. And it's one that, it's a sore one, like, you know, because we were certainly with Meath. We played Meath in the challenge game that year up to open the field, and I think we beat them comfortably enough. You know, was that a good thing to do? Possibly not, to play Meath in a challenge game. Dara Shea that year, that day, absolutely had a, you know, caught everything in the middle of the field. He gave an exhibition of feeling in the middle of the field. You know, Meath weren't going to do that, and they didn't allow Dara to do that, and they were checking him and blocking him, and, you know, like, what's going to happen in the middle of the field? But, you know, they had their homework done, and they saw what was coming, and, you know, we were obviously very disappointed with that, and it was just a sore one, you know. But look, that's sport, Tony, and there's no, as I said, did we see it coming? Absolutely not.
Because, I mean, just for anybody who forgets that the chronology of the time, Kerry won an All-Ireland, a brilliant All-Ireland in 2000, took two games to beat Armagh in the semi-final and two to beat Galway in the final. And I will come back to that, because you were captain and it was one of your, well, I would actually say it was your greatest season, but, like, it was brilliant to finish it as captain. But when you think of what happened afterwards, how difficult was it to bounce back? Because you lose to Meath in 2001, and then you have the All-Ireland final against Armagh in 2002, and you have that chaotic semi-final against Tyrone in 2003. Yeah. Those years, they were tough years, Seamo.
Yeah, anytime, look, Tony, when you lose in Croke Park, it's just the worst feeling in the world. You just want the ground to open up and devour you and just get you out of that place. And, you know, look, I suppose that's the beauty of sport. You can't win everything. And I know in Kerry, we've been so fortunate that Kerry teams have got four in a row, and we've been so close to getting five in a row. And but I was with a Kerry team that had quality, it had everything, and, you know, we won some great All-Irelands, but we've lost some big ones as well. And unfortunately, all the years, as you mentioned, 2001, 2002, 2003, very close, very there and thereabouts. And just didn't get it over the line. 2002 was exceptionally, it was a really disappointing one.
That was one of those ones that got away, you'd say.
Yeah, because we were comfortable at half time and, you know, just didn't perform. I say scored very, very little. I've never watched that game and never will. I don't watch games anyway, Tony. But I can't recall too many scores in that second half. Like, you know, I think we were up 5 points. We lost by a point at the end. And, you know, just one of those things. Look, having Maurice Fitz wasn't on the panel that year, you know. He pulled out, I think. And, you know, just having a cool head like Morris maybe to come in when when they're just the perfect storm occurred, and when they got that goal, and just all we needed was someone to settle it down. We had plenty of opportunities. It was just we needed someone just to guide the ball over the bar and just to steady the ship again, and just to have someone like Morris. Ty Kinnealy was kind of hoovering around. He had come back from Australia and was flying in training as well, to be fair. And you know, we just maybe needed something then. I can see why Paddy wouldn't have brought Ty again, that he didn't want to drop a guy he had been training all year. And you know, you can see the rationale behind that. But I just think that was certainly one that we left behind, and we played some fantastic football after losing to Cork. After
It is said that after losing to Cork that year, I've heard Kinnaird talk about, like, saying that Kerry of that vintage that summer was the best football you played up to the final.
There's no doubting that, Tony, and it was actually brilliant to be a part of it. And you know, the whole training inside and the games, it was electric. And some of the football that was played, you know, it was unbelievable. And it was like a team that was on a mission. We, you know, obviously Dara, the boys pair, Dara and Mark and Tomás's dad passed away the week before the replay, and it was a tough one. It was a tough game to play that Saturday, and you know, we knew we didn't do ourselves justice, and we definitely turned the ship 360 in terms through the qualifiers, and we grabbed the opportunity and we went for it. And you know, there were some fantastic games along the way. You know, playing Galway, I think it was in the quarter final, playing Cork in the semi. And you know, we were you know, teed up nicely for the Armagh game. But look, it was just a second half performance where that, as I said, guys didn't perform in the second half. And even though we still only lost by a point, and it was just one that you can look back at and say all we needed was, as I said, someone like Morris, who came on in 2000 and was instrumental in those games where we drew and came in, got a goal, kicked a point when we needed the level games. And it was just a pity that he wasn't part of that, because if we had a second day out, I would have been confident. Look, you never know. Armagh went so close and beating us in 2000, and you know, it was only inches that we won that game as well. You know, and I suppose the wheel goes full circle, and we got caught out in 2002. But it was a disappointing, especially when Dara was captain, and what they had gone through that summer. It would have been fantastic for Dara and for Paddy that year to have brought home Sam McGuire, because they really deserve that.
Yeah, and you know what, ironically, even though it was only 12 months later, like, Armagh played a brand of football that probably wouldn't have prepared you for the physical storm that was coming 12 months later in that semi-final against Tyrone, Seamus. And I suppose I'd be interested in your thoughts, and I'll tell you why, things I remember from the time. Was that the year that football changed to some degree? Because I remember, and you probably certainly won't remember this, I sat down beside you in the dressing room after that game. That was the time when reporters were actually allowed to still go into dressing rooms. And you described it, if you remember at the time, as it being like Times Square out there. You said it was like basically trying to operate in Times Square. Yep. You know, you turn one way, you turn the other way, you were getting battered, you were getting physically, you know, pressed. Like, 2003, as I suppose the point I'm making is, even though you lost to an Ulster team in 2002, being beaten by Tyrone in 2003 felt something like very different.
Oh, there's no doubting that. And Tyrone brought a new, I suppose, a level of work rate to the table. Galway were probably the first team to do that in terms of pushing up and into the defence, and they were making it awkward for teams coming out. But obviously in 2003 we just went to another level, and in fairness worked really well for Tyrone. But the work rate that they brought that day was unbelievable. And you know, you can look back at it now. I still feel that the referee that day was very weak. I've genuinely felt that he left an awful lot go in terms of what's like the in terms of the tackling. And you know, but that does not Tyrone were well worth their win on the day. We were just in terms of, we were just off the pace, I felt myself. And you know, the few games that you could probably see it, if you look back on it, as I said, Tony, I don't look at those games, but we struggled against Roscommon, I'd say, before, in the quarter final of that in 2003. I know my own man personally got a handy goal coming into the game, or high ball into the square. We were disjointed, not organised, got a handy goal, and I think Roscommon might have got three or four handy goals that day. Just to keep him, we were probably coasting and kicking points, but we didn't win the game by a huge margin. Weren't playing well, so I suppose the signs were there, and a young fresh team from Tyrone came up, you know, obviously we knew about the Peter Canavans and we had knew a little about the under 21s, but to be fair, we didn't know too much about him. Peter Canavan went off injured that day, and Stephen O'Neill, I went on Stephen O'Neill, and I knew of him, but I didn't know, I knew way more about him when the game was over. But you know, and that's the beauty of sport. These new young lads come on and you know, they were just buzzing, they were hopping and they were full of energy. And you know, I suppose at that stage we were the likes of myself and Derek and Aidan and Liam Hassett and guys who had been soldiering for, this was my 11th year playing with Kerry, and yeah, you know, it does take its toll. There's no, you don't have the same pace, or you don't have the same, you still have the same head, but that yard is slipping every year, probably slips. And
well, it's funny you should, because I was actually, when I was, I won't say who he was, but I was talking to a Kerry player of your vintage there last week, and I was saying, look, I wanted to bring Shamo up, and we were talking about that time, and he made the exact same point you made. Like, people forget that Seamus was 11 years playing with Kerry, yeah, by 2003. And he said that, and maybe it's a different season now, but he said his enduring memory of you in those times was you used to have your feet in a bucket of water, yeah, before training, and that you were basically, you know, the body was catching up on you at that stage.
Yeah, there's no doubting that, Tony. And you know, I struggled with back injury, just bulging discs and stuff like that, and the Achilles tendon was coming in, the odd hamstring, and but look, thankfully nothing that was, no cruciate ligaments or, yeah, nothing sinister like that. But having said that, if you year in, year out, you're playing with your club, you're playing with your district team East Kerry, you're playing with Kerry, you're trying to play the National League, you're trying to get right for prime for championship, you know, it's year in, year out, played Sigerson for 6 years, it will play international rules, you know, you can't be all things to all people. And as you get older, it will catch you, and I think you have to be a little bit cuter, but there's no doubting that. And I think Tyrone were just coming right, they were coming off an All-Ireland winning team in 2001, and the bulk of those players came through. They had some really quality players, combining then with some experienced players like Peter Callum that they had, you know, they created a fantastic team with a great manager over them, and they just brought the work ethos and to another level, there's no doubting that. And they had quality players too. They had quality, yeah, players, they had quality forwards that could score, and you know, they had a fantastic mix, and they were able to mix it, and they could play it dirty, they could play football when they had to play football, and look, that's a team. And there's no doubting that. And you look, I suppose during that whole decade, Kerry in and out, we didn't have a great record against Tyrone, but we still chipped in, we still got our All-Irelands, and
around that time, I mean, am I right in saying you missed a lot of 2004? Am I right in saying?
I got the National League. We had a good run in the league, and I got bone bruising in my ankle in a county championship match against Lone Rangers back in Killarglen.
It's just a fell. Slow healer.
I never heard of bone bruising my whole life, and it's only when I went back and got an MRI on it, and I was told it was bone bruising, I was kind of saying, sure, what the hell is that? But the doctor was trying to explain the significance of the injury and how long it would, I couldn't understand it, and it was probably one of the most frustrating injuries I ever had, because it just needed total rest. Like, the more you did, the worse it got, and it wouldn't. So if you trained in it for a week, you put yourself back nearly 3 weeks by doing that. Yeah. So it took 11 or 12 weeks for that to clear. And you know, while I was doing alternative training with Pat Flanagan and just tried to keep the thing going, and I was involved, I just got in at the butt end of the year, and I say the boys kind of felt sorry for me in the Mayo game, and they lashed me in. I think I came on, I don't know, was it for Liam Hassett? I think I came on centre forward. But
yeah,
the game was over, Tony, to be fair. I don't think they'd have been doing that if Kerry were only up a point or down a point. I don't think they would have been bringing me in.
Yeah.
I think it was just the fact that I'd put in a hard slog to stay with it, and to get there.
And of course, I had
been a part of a good run in the National League, and I think Jack probably respected that as well, in the sense that he needed guys to row in with him the time he came in and won the league. It took a lot of pressure off him as well.
I suppose Jack was new that year, but I'd be interested. I can imagine what Seamus Moynihan would have thought of Paul Galvin, the likes of Galvin now and Mahoney. That was their first year. Can you remember seeing this young fella from Fenuig strolling in the door, for 2004.
But Paul had been kind of in and out anyway like, you know, so I would have known, and I'd have clashed horns with Paul playing Field Rangers and stuff like that as well, and I would have known him through UCC, and, you know, so myself and Paul and we're all great buddies and, you know, great guys. But, you know, I suppose Jack knew himself that year he needed to change around. He was inheriting a relatively good team that was capable of winning in All-Ireland, but he knew he had to bring new dimensions and new players into it and freshen it up. And I think that year he got the perfect platform, because Uncle were involved in the club, All-Ireland that year. And so his hand was basically tied. Forced, he had to go with it. So he that year, obviously, as you said, he found Aidan Mahoney. You know, Aidan and Paul had been in with Paddy, but just weren't getting the breaks. But, you know, that year they just blossomed, and they were thrown in. Into the league, and there was no looking over their shoulders. There's a jersey here for you, and they were getting it day in, day out, and they were putting in super performances. And on top of that, William Kirby found his great form in the middle of the field again. So
Crowley was lethal that year, wasn't Crowley he? Your club mate.
Yeah, Crowley had a fantastic year. And, you know, I can remember in 2004, he actually was taken off against Limerick. I just got my injury that year, and he had hurt his knee playing as well, but just hadn't got back to the full level for the replay inside in Killarney, and was very frustrated. I still can remember him kicking the water bottles when he was being taken off. But, you know, Johnny was, you know, very determined and had a temper, and, you know, used it extremely well on the field, physically unbelievably strong player. But, you know, from there on then, John had a massive year.
Yeah.
And like inside in the 2004 final himself, Canadian Gooch
did
unbelievable wreck in that final, like, you know, any ball. And I think John mightn't have scored, but I would say he instigated probably definitely 7 or 8 points in that game. He got fouled 3 or 4 times, and he was just winning ball,
diagonal ball into
diagonal
him
ball
all day,
coming
yeah.
in and yeah. like John is if the ball John is like the bomber, if the ball is coming in like that, you just can't beat him. Like he was deceivingly fast and unbelievably strong, and head left and right, but was always a great man. If you were running off the shoulder, John always gave it. But that was one of the probably best counter forward performances anyone gave, without probably scoring himself on the day.
Yeah.
You know, but John, 3 years prior to that, got his first All-Star after blowing the lights out against Dublin and whatnot. And it's a pity that we had, as you said, we spoke about it earlier, that breakdown against Meade, because he was in line that year and early for Player of the Year, like, you know.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking at this stage now, or you've got another All-Ireland medal in your back pocket, although knowing you, you probably feel, it wasn't a kind of a full one, because I missed most of the summer. But after 2004, is Seamus Moynihan thinking at all, you know what, no, and getting out the gap here?
Oh, absolutely not. Not in 2004 anyway, Tony. Not a hope. Not the way that I won that All-Ireland medal anyway. And, you know, Dara Shea and myself were sitting in the stand that day watching the game. And, like, I said to Dara, like, you know, we were delighted to have another All-Ireland medal. It was certainly different to all the other All-Irelands, because we had left our boots on the field and everything. You know, we've just given your blood and guts for the previous two All-Irelands, and you know, they are, look, and it's fantastic to see it on both sides, but, you know, ultimately you want to win an All-Ireland by being part of the mix, and you know, so that was the next drive. And I would have said, Tony, if we'd beaten Tyrone in 2005, I was gonna lose. I would have been gone, and it would have been a nice way to end. And instead, I ended up being fucking taken off with around 10 or 15 minutes to go.
Against
Tyrone.
Were you?
Yeah.
And in the 2005 final.
You know, heading a good day, but it was kind of a funny one where I was kind of told hang back and kind of mind the house. And then Brian Doerr was getting on this ball inside midfield, back in his own line, and he was allowed to run up 20, 30 yards. And that certainly went against my DNA, personally, myself, because I prefer, if you're going to get the fucking ball, you earn it, like. And I hate hanging back and letting a guy run at you, and it's not the way I play football personally myself. As I said, I'm a guy who's, if you're going to beat me going for it.
Yeah.
But look, with 15 minutes to go, I was taken off, and rightly so, and I think Kerry needed to freshen it up. And you know, we actually nearly got back to Moshe, got a wonder goal that day,
I remember,
coming back and brought the game back into it. And you know, look, still Tyrone just edged out at the end, and it was a bitter one, you know, to be fair, from everyone involved. And
but I'm gauging personally, it was particularly, like you were saying, oh no, 2000, like, I mean, I'd say you were never taken off, Certainly not for tactical reasons.
Well, it was the first time I was taken off of Kerry, yeah, and you know. But look, I came home and it was obviously lost the All-Ireland, and it was really, really disappointing. And I was unsure whether I was going to throw my lot in again. Was it time just to walk away? And you know, I suppose when the dust settled, I was saying there's no way I'm going to go. On that note, I just wanted to say, look, I'm going to give it one blast. And you know, just that year I went back and I did, you know, up to then I suppose I was trying to do the weights with the boys. I was trying to go in with Owen and Owen Brosnan and Dermot Murphy and the younger fellas. I was going into the Glen and they were doing the squats with 150 kgs of weights on the bars, and I was trying to do what they were doing, but ultimately I wasn't, because my back wasn't allowing me. And it was I always describe it, Tony, it was kind of trying to run or drive a car with a handbrake up. Just I was trying to run, and that's the way I felt in 2005. I just felt I had no agility. My pace had gone, and I just needed to do something different. And thankfully that year I just backed away from the weights. I went doing core. I went to Joe Hartman and Joe Keane above in Limerick, and it was just, you know, they were fantastic. They were a breath of fresh air. They're not only the physios, but they're kind of psychologists as well, and they're really positive guys. And between the core training and just working on stretching, totally, and went back doing a lot of running and a lot of just 2 minute runs, 3 minute runs, just doing cycles and you know, stuff that I had done
on your own.
On
this
my
was.
Own, yeah, absolutely. Because I didn't go in with Kerry. I didn't go in with Kerry until they Mike Mack broke his finger, and I had gone back, pulled the hammer, and I pulled back out again. And I kind of went training again for another 3 weeks. This is coming to the latter stages of the National League. So I got a text from Jack saying, was I all right to come in? And played centre back against Dublin, I think. That was the first game I came back in. And we drew with Dublin. Jamie, my young fella, was born the day before. And so played in that game, got a draw. And we were playing Leashton in the semi-final. Mike Mack broke his finger. So I think I came in then for Mike from there on then. But it was the easiest National League medal I ever got. We played a semi-final, and I can't remember again in the final. God almighty, who would we play in?
Was it Galway in the final? No.
It might have been Galway. I can't for the life of me. Yeah. I suppose this shows where we are in terms of National Leagues and the importance of it.
Yeah, but can I say something? No, knowing you as I do in your backstory, I think you're skipping over a small bit there. I don't think people fully appreciate the levels you went to after 2005, because I would say, and you'll deny it now, but I would say you were mentally and physically you were in a bad way, and I'd say mentally you were tortured after 2005. And I'd say that winter, Seamo, you went away, and would it be an exaggeration to say you almost reinvented yourself for 2006 physically and every other way?
Well, I definitely turned it around. I turned it on its head anyway, Tony, and I said, look, what I'm doing right now isn't working. I'm playing cat football, worst performance I've ever given in Sidon Croke Park, and it's either do something different or pack it. And I just felt I and that's what I did. And you know, in fairness to Jack and Pat, were always, once you kept communicating with them and let them know what you were doing, and you know, there was never a problem. And you know, it just worked for me that year, Tony. It was I knew I needed to do something, and there's no doubting the just increasing the stretching and working with guys stretching, and it was doing the core and just cutting back. As look, physically I never had a problem. Grew up on a farm, I did hard work all my life, and it was never physically, I was never going to get caught anyway. It was in terms of being agile, being able to turn, being able to twist, being able to keep up with the pace, not having tight hamstrings, not being just the agility. And football is an agile game. You're breaking ball, you want to twist and turn, you want to jump in the air, you want to land, you want to move. It's there's no point being able to lift 150 kg squatting if it's not replicated out in the field, if that power is not replicated. And in fairness, for the likes of the Owen Brosnans and the Paul Galvins and the Aidan Mahoneys and the Mike Max, it was working for those guys because they were in a different stage of their career.
Yeah, your body was more compromised at this stage.
Completely different position. Yeah. And so it was just to basically tailor the training to suit. And I did. And thankfully, what I worked extremely hard that year by myself, it worked, and I came back in good stay, in good nick, and I was able to, was just able to get back into the pace of the game, and I you know, it just, it held from that period in. Once I came in for the National League, I fell back, and you know, 2006 was a great year, albeit we got beaten by Cork above in Páirc Uí-Chaoimh, and you know, in a dead enough game, we played quite well in the National League, went a little bit dead, but then Jack, in fairness, reinvented the whole thing again. He brought Starr back in full forward. He brought Tommy Griffin to midfield. He brought Mike Fack-Russell in corner forward, and the whole game thing changed. Like Starr.
Well, I'm gonna come back to that. Yeah. His thing, because he was actually only on about it himself last week, as you know, in this Laoghaire Gael special that he's doing, the birth of your first son. How much of a kind of an inspirational boost was the timing of that? Because you'd put down a hard winter, and you were just getting back. As I said, I remember you picked up the hamstring thing, which was frustrating at the time.
Yep.
And then Jamie's born.
Yep.
I'd say the following day you must have nearly skipped onto that field, did you?
Yeah, and it was great. And, you know, it was a great buzz. And I think I punched the ball over the bar to get to get a draw. Gooch gave me a good pass in. And we got a draw that day against Dublin. And, you know, it was fantastic. But, you know, Jamie was born the following day. But nothing was going to stop me playing for Kerry the following day. Mm. And, you know, I had a few drinks with a friend of mine that night. And you know, look, in the back of my head, I was going to say, this is it. This is my last year. I am going to throw everything at this. And
you had decided that, well, in
that
the spring
was it,
even.
Come hell or high water. And it was going to be the year. And there was no turning back from that. And you know, it's sometimes, Tony, I think you have to draw a line in the sand, and because you can't just keep putting it off and waiting for it to, you know, whenever we win the next one, because that, I was running out of time, and I knew personally I couldn't continue doing what I was doing in terms of training, and on top of that, life, Tony, was catching up on top of me, to be fair, because obviously Jamie had come along, and I got married in 2007, and we were building a house, and you know, all the, with work and everything, it's ultimately, I suppose, football is a greedy game. You have to, from the minute you get up in the morning to the minute you turn off that light, it's about you, and it's about getting the best out of yourself. And what am I going to do today to put myself in a better place, to be a better player on the Sunday? And it's about training, about recovery, about eating, and everything revolves about putting yourself in that position.
It's an obsession.
It is. And it's, you know, you talk to any player, that's the way it is. And it was like that back since I started. It's probably gone to another level where we are now. But if you want to ultimately win an All-Ireland or whatever, you have to put football and put your team and put yourself up on top of that pie chart, and everything else, your son, your wife, your father, your mother, your family, your friends, everything else is way, your work, everything, everything is well down the chart. And you know, so I obviously, as I said, 2006 was going to be the last one, and obviously being beaten by Cork up here was certainly very, very disappointing. But to be fair, it no different to 2002, the whole thing turned around again. Jack reinvented,
because you did have the qualifiers.
We had the qualifiers.
And Jack was able to say, okay, let's have a look at this young big buck from Aston Stacks.
Yeah, I think Jack didn't say he had to, because we just had to. I think that day against Cork, we struggled. We were dilly-dallying around with the ball, and we weren't just kicking the ball into the full forward line, and you know, which is something that Kerry always do. You'd get fast ball in, and Jack just had to change it, and with Donaghy, it was the ideal man. And you know, Declan had just gone through a bad patch that summer as well. Declan was probably the best centre forward that I've ever played with, and he just had hit the wall that year for some unknown reason. And in fairness to Declan was giving as much to Drummond as to South Kerry is to Kerry. He's that kind of a guy, and just players do that, they will hit the wall. But in fairness to Declan, was dropped, I think, for the Longford match, but found his form again.
Was
and
that
start.
The day that he was booed off in that season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he got booed off up in Páirc Uí-Chaimh.
He was, which was
of the most horrendous things I've seen happening in my career, considering the calibre player you're dealing with. And but look, Declan's made his tough skinned and you know, finished the year extremely strong that year. And
he was blinding in the final.
Unbelievable,
remember?
Yeah. And set up goals and came through. And Declan was just showed the quality that he had. But it just shows that players can go through funny and sticky patches. And you know, that in fairness, Declan had gone through that little bit of a sticky patch during the summer, but thankfully we had the opportunity through the back door to find that form again, and Declan did. So that's a defining of four players. You, Declan finding his form again, You had Starr coming in full forward, Mike Frank Russell coming in corner, and Tommy Griffin coming in midfield.
Yeah.
You know, so that's nearly a third of your team, Tony, and all good guys, and all guys who ultimately nearly were in the All-Star pickings, I'd say, coming at the end of 2006.
Did you get a chance? I think it was Tomás or Paul Galvin said this one stage that in one of their final All-Irelands, Seamus, they were kind of able to look around before the final whistle and kind of say, like, you know, they were able to soak it in. You won that game very comfortably against Mayo in 2006. Yeah. Were you able to do that on the day? Did you look around and kind of saying, Christ, I'm going to miss this?
Yeah, do you know what, Tony? I didn't. And I'd be lying to say I did, because, and I know we won comfortably enough in that second half, but I think we were all so focused in the job at hand. And especially what happened, it was a very strange game in the sense that we went up 10 points.
I remember, yeah.
And within a couple of minutes, Mayo had three goals in the back of the net.
That's right.
Again, like, you know, and we were still comfortable enough at half time, but there were three shocking goals to give away. Like, and in fairness, it might have been a great thing for us, because at half time, you know, the whole thing was, you know, we had an opportunity to come in. Jack kind of addressed the scenario and the situation, well, how the three goals came about. And in fairness, he, you know, I think Owen Brazen came into the team in the second half, and Owen was probably unlucky enough not to be on the team, but played very well in that second half. But we took off again where we started from word go, and you know, just fairness, we played a very solid second half without getting goals. We kicked some great points.
Yeah, steadied the ship.
Yeah, Jack kind of asked me to stay back a little bit and just mind the house a little bit. So, but at no stage were we kind of absorbing in the atmosphere or saying this is it, this is the life. And you know, it's a hard one to do, but no, and for me personally, I didn't anyway, Tony, until such time that the whistle went. It was an opportunity then to.
Do you beat yourself up more? Are you one of those players who remembers the losses more than the wins?
Well, I think you're reminded of the losses more than the wins anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
In Kerry, I don't think anyone ever has come up to me to say, Jesus, that one of the years we won the Ireland was great. It's invariably, what the fuck happened to you in 2002? Or why were you so shit in 2001? That's invariably the...
That's the question.
It's, you know, and I think that's a good thing. I think that keeps you grounded as well.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you genuinely, because, I mean, you have so many of them, who's the best player you played with. But what I would ask you is, if you could pick one guy to walk down a mean street with from your days in Kerry, if you could pick one guy that you wanted in that dressing room when you were in the shit, who would it be?
Dara Shea, I'd say. Dara.
Really?
Yeah. Dara was, in fairness, a midfield. He was a Trojan midfielder, Tony, like, you know. His work rate in middle of the field was unbelievable. And Dara could play it anyway. Like, he could play it tough. He could go up, catch a screamer in the middle of the field. He was up and down. He was box to box.
Kick a score.
He could kick a score. He could catch a ball underneath. He saved us in 2004.
Against Limerick, do you
against
remember?
Against Limerick twice. Yeah. And Mr. Keating would still be... probably cursing him, you know. There were fantastic kicks from long distance, and just Dara went up and picked them up. But, you know, Dara, and on top of that, fantastic character on and off the rogue, the highest sense, there's no doubting that, you know. But you need that kind of,
probably the roguiest of the three Shays.
Oh yes, and that's a high standard now, to be fair. That's
a rogues gallery.
That's a rogues gallery, to be fair. But no, Dara, he certainly would be. In terms of what he did for Kerry for his playing career, like, he was a warrior, like, you know. Mm. And he's a guy that if you were going picking a team in the morning, you'd have to have him in the middle of the field, and which you like.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, could you imagine a scenario? I don't know, did it ever happen? Sure, it did happen, where you had Seamus Moynihan at 6, where you had Dara Shea in midfield, and where you had Declan Sullivan at 11.
It happened in 2006 anyway. Yeah, that would have been the last. I was centre back, and Dara would have been in the midfield, and Declan was on the far.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the team in 2006 anyway, yeah.
Nobody would accuse that team, I'd say, of lacking leaders. Like, you look at some teams now and you kind of say to yourself, do they lack a bit of leadership? But I suppose when you got to that stage, and I know it was your last All-Ireland, my God, they were serious. That was serious leadership.
Oh yeah, it was a very strong team, Tony, to be fair.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, when you look at the players, you had Mark Shea, Mike Mack, Tom Sullivan was the full back line, Aidan Mahoney, myself, and
Tomás
O'Shea was the wing back line. You had Tommy Griffin, Tommy G, and Dara midfield. Yeah. You know, like an extremely that's very, very solid. And like up front, you had Sean Bourne, you had Declan Sullivan and Paul Galvin, and inside you had the Star and Gooch and Mike Frank. That was the you know, it was a really, really solid team. And you know, look, they went down again in 1997 and unlucky in 98. It was still
2008.
There was a quality players. It was a really, really strong panel, and there was guys on that panel there. Darren Sullivan was coming in and out. Ronan O'Connor was coming in and out. Brian Sheehan was coming in and out. You know, those guys would have made any other team at the time. And you know, I suppose all you have to do is really look at Dublin at the minute. And it's not wonder they're winning the All-Irelands. They are winning because they've just five guys on the bench that would walk on any inter-county team. Yeah. There's no doubting that. And you know, and that's what makes their training so special, because there's guys biting at the bait. There's guys who want to be on that Dublin team, and they're so unlucky not to be on it, because there's such a quality of, there's an abundance in quality. And we were very fortunate that period that we had that quality. We didn't win the five in a row. What Dublin have done is unbelievable. And to even to see what hunger they're bringing to the National League, even though, you know, it's in one sense it's irrelevant for them. They're obviously looking at a bigger picture, but like, they have a massive hunger. They don't want to lose any game, and it's a credit to them, to be fair. But you know, we were fortunate back then, and to have real depth in the panel.
And just finally, I mean, because we're what type of a GAA fan is Seamus Moynihan now? I mean, do you go to all the games? Do you not? Are you involved at underage in Glenflesk? What way are you fixed?
Yeah, in terms of Kerry, of course, I'm still a Black Kerry fan. Didn't travel on the weekends, and to be fair, Tony, I'm not going up to the Tyrone games, or I didn't go to Castlebar yesterday, but I go to all the local games and I go to all the championship games, of course. But you know, I suppose I spent 20 nearly guts of 15 16 years on that
treadmill.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with three small kids, it's an impossibility bar taking them with you to the game or whatnot, you know. So it's a hard one to do, the away games, but all the obviously any game that I can go to, I will go to.
Do you know where your medals are now?
No, in a box inside in the office or somewhere like that. Anyway, it's not something, look, of course I great to have the medals, but they're inside in some form of a box at home. Anyway, they're there. I know they're there, but they're not in any up in any stand or whatnot. And it's good to have those medals, but it's not about the medal. It's of course about winning, but to be looking at them inside in some press or drawer, that's not what they're about. Anyway, to be fair. But
well, medals are medals, or medals are not medals. I have to say that in my book. And I don't know why I always put yourself and Declan O'Sullivan in the same category. I suppose it's because, you know, people talk about the Gooches and they're talking about Clifford and Morris Fitznow. But in terms of pound for pound, I'd say Seamus Moynihan and Declan Sullivan, pound for pound, must be two. If I was picking a top 10 Kerry footballers of all time, Seamus Moynihan and Declan O'Sullivan are there. So I know you'd be too embarrassed to answer that. Seamus Moynihan, thanks
Tony,
a million.
Thank you, my man. Thanks. Nice. Thank
Good
you
talking
very much.
To you. Good man.